Good morning. You've tuned into the morning show here on 88.5 KRFY. This is Panhandle Community Radio. I'm Jack Peterson, and I'm here as usual with Jim Healy. Good morning to you, Jim.
A good wet morning.
Yes, it is a good wet morning.
Can I ask you a question?
Uh-huh.
I know this is personal.
Uh-huh.
You pedaled down this morning.
I did.
Do you have a wet butt?
Yes, I do.
I thought so, because I just peeked in, and you have no back fender on your bicycle.
No, no, I have a long yellow rain slicker that I wear, but it's not enough.
Yeah, okay.
It does.
Just asking.
Mm-hmm. No, I got a little damp this morning, but it's not too cold or anything. It wasn't too miserable. It's not coming down hard.
I thought it was nippy.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not alone in here, are we?
No. Okay, let's introduce our guests right off the bat.
Go for it.
Okay, in the studio with us, Tim Bangle, the director, and three actors, Michael Bigley, Nikki Luttman, and Sydney Carlson, from an upcoming performance of Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yes. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
That was very nice.
Whoa, love the enthusiasm.
I like that effect.
I think it was in...
Mm-hmm.
It was syncopate, just perfect. Okay,
yeah. We've been practicing that for a week.
Mm-hmm. Have you?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
That's all we got, though.
You got a lot to learn between now and tomorrow night.
Okay, let's see who's correct. Is it chilly outside? Yes, I guess it is.
Of us thought it was nippy.
Yeah, it's 37 degrees right now, so it is not super warm. I guess I just have a warm coat. I don't know.
But it's wet.
It's wet, yes. We have a 100% chance of rain right now. No surprise. Mixed with snow this morning, but becoming all rain after 10 o'clock this morning.
You probably said the magic word for all the skiers out there who aren't willing to give up the season.
Right. They've got, what, three more days of potential ski at Schweitzer before they shut down for the year. Then it's let me tell you the elevation. The snow level is at 2,700 feet and will rise to 3,800 feet in the afternoon.
Cool.
So, yeah, they will get a little snow up at Schweitzer.
There
should
you
be
go.
Getting some right now. The high today down here near 44 degrees.
Nippy.
Yeah, a little nippy. And it's going to rain all day, it looks like. At 100% right now and dipping down to about 90% in the afternoon. But that's not much. We might get a very small
gives people
break.
A chance to be in the 10% area where it's not raining.
Step outside. Take a breath.
And absolutely.
Then, yeah. Tonight, though, the rain will diminish and then go away, hopefully. Tomorrow, the chance of rain is only 20% and the high is 47 degrees. Friday night, decreasing clouds and clearing up heading into Saturday. A high of 56 and mostly sunny. Going into Saturday, on Saturday night, partly cloudy. On Sunday, a high of 62 and mostly sunny.
Sunscreen.
On Easter Sunday, no less. And then on Monday, a high of 65 and mostly sunny. Any rain in the further forecast? I guess coming up next week, about Wednesday, there's a 30% chance of rain. So it'll rain again. But it looks like a beautiful weekend.
I am smug. I am smug because I mowed the front lawn. Before the rain.
Good
because
job.
It was getting really long.
You had threatened to do that.
And I did. I did.
Good.
I have the weather forecast for the Washington, D.C. area, as I do every Thursday when I'm here. My sister and brother-in-law, thanks to Alexa, they say Alexa, 88.5 KRFY, and boom, technology. The weather, 58 now, high of 65 expected. Like Sandpoint, gray and cloudy, no sunshine today.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the D.C. area.
Well, there you go. What more to discuss?
The Final Four.
Coming up.
How are you doing?
Well, Duke lost. That hurt.
Did they ever? A 40-foot shot.
What a...
A three.
Yeah, what a game. That was a great one. Yeah,
if you're rooting for Connecticut.
If you're rooting for Connecticut. I did have Duke losing in the finals to Michigan, so I still have a route to victory in my brackets. Yeah.
A Big Ten guy.
I have a theory about March Madness every year, and I thought this year it would favor in the early brackets, we'd favor the South and small private schools. But then as the bracket went on, because of the harsh winter in the Midwest, the hardy Midwestern teams would hold on more than the others. And so far, I'm doing okay, but I did, yeah. And if I had stuck to that theory, I would have taken Connecticut over Duke, and I would have gotten that game correct.
But okay.
I just couldn't do it.
Can I say something?
Go ahead, Jim.
How many teams are in the Big Ten, Jack?
Oh, what, like 19?
19,
like
okay. Yeah. And March Madness, in what month is this?
We're in April. Yeah.
Okay. Just saying.
Yeah, it is a little odd.
Okay. Let's make some talk about what's going to be occurring at the Panetta Theater, A Midsummer Night's Dream. We're skipping spring.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow night, that would be Friday, and Saturday at 7 p.m., the show will go on. I think the doors are open an hour before. Okay, an hour before. Then on next week, 4 performances, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, Thursday and Friday, and Saturday at 7 p.m., doors at 6. And Sunday the 12th is a matinee at 2.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay.
I've done what I had to say.
Okay. What is there to say that hasn't been said about Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream? Tim, I noticed you're sitting back from the microphone real quick, but we should pull you in, especially for the beginning.
The director.
Tell us what's different about this. Whenever there's a Tim Bangle performance of a classic play, there is something different about it than you might expect. What's different about the staging of this play?
I have that reputation now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's true. You do.
What's different about this show is a lot of it, except for the dialogue. You know, we haven't, we've tweaked some of words within the text to make it relatable to today's audiences, but for the most part, the text is untouched. I'll let Michael speak to the adaptation component because he was instrumental in that. But pretty much everything is updated. We're doing it in modern-day New York City. So a lot of modern costumes that you would find out on the streets today. We've built the city. Like, we have a massive street and cityscape structure that we perform around and in. And then we have Central Park on one of the other sides of the stage. And a lot of music. And we even have a ballet dance in the show as part of, like, the wedding dance. So there's a lot of new things that you're going to find.
Cool. I can see Central Park coming into this play pretty significantly, what I know of A Midsummer Night's Dream. Yeah. Okay. Makes sense.
It's my bower. I play Titania, Queen of the Fairies.
Okay.
And your
bower.
My yes. bower is in Central Park, and certainly a lot of fun. It's one of those places that magical things happen.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask Michael, what are some of the challenges? I take it you've updated some of the language. What were some of the challenges, you know, in terms of we keep this, we don't keep this, we...
Right, sure. The biggest thing, honestly, that we started cutting for was just length.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know if attention spans have degraded over the last 400 years, but there's some long speeches that, you know, we can cut in half or a third and still have all the same information mm-hmm. coming from mm-hmm. it. So that was sort of step number one, removing some of the more sort of abstruse allusions, right? We're not as literate in Greek myth as Shakespeare's audience was, so we've cut some of that. Other than that, just very, very few, a couple pieces of vocabulary that, you know, we substituted a fitting modern word just to make it a little bit easier. But, you know, like Tim said, we're set in New York City, but we're still saying Athens, right? The setup of the play is it begins and ends in the city, but all of the middle takes place in the woods outside the city. So here that's Central Park.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would also like to add one of the things that I found very impressive with what Michael did with his edits. he kept everything in iambic pentameter. So even if he changed the words, the English teacher in him could not let that go, and it still fits perfectly within the text. So kudos, Michael.
I remember at one point there's an insult that it was actually sort of a racially coded slur in Shakespeare's time. So we were looking for something, and we really had to find something that had the same syllable pattern. And I think, what did we end up with? Was that porcupine?
Porcupine.
Porcupine is the new insult.
Is there an intermission?
There is an intermission. There's a 15-minute intermission. It is the play does, including the intermission, it's a little under 3 hours, so it's not short,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I've adapted a couple Shakespeare plays before.
Okay.
I did both Macbeth and Hamlet with the Unknown Locals at the Hartwood Center a decade ago. In both those plays, I was able to cut quite a lot, cut whole scenes, whole characters. But Midsummer just didn't work like that. The plot is too tight.
There's too much. Yes,
you know, take one piece out and everything's going to fall apart. So it is. It is. 2 hours 45 minutes runtime. 2 hours 40 minutes plus an intermission.
What's the age range for the audience? In terms of junior high students, grandma and grandpa. How low would you go before, the length is a matter of concern.
It is. It is. I could definitely imagine. Some junior high students, I think it would be great if they, knew the gist of the story going in.
And there's no reason why not to. One can go to Google or something like that and get just the bare bones of the plot.
Right,
which I would highly recommend.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's a 400-year-old play that's been performed hundreds of thousands of times.
What if it's more popular?
There's plenty of resources out there mm-hmm. to understand, yeah.
One of the things I was just going to add is we do have a student ticket. Is it 18 and under, Tim? 17 and under is $15. So it just helps if families do want to come see. And a lot of our cast and crew are teenagers. And it is very relatable, particularly for teenagers. We have some interludes with the young lovers. And there's so much drama at that age that it's very fun to see that it hasn't changed that much in 400 years.
Cool. And you mentioned a keyword, tickets. One can go to panada.org and follow the prompts.
Yes.
And get tickets.
LPO repertory on our LPO rep. Sorry. Our website, LPO rep, also has a link that takes you directly to the Panada tickets.
Perfect.
Well, there you go. We're talking to Tim Bangle, Michael Bigley, Nikki Lutman, and Sydney Carlson about the play, A Midsummer Night's Dream. Tell us, I guess, about the play. For anyone who's not familiar, this is one of Shakespeare's comedies, not tragedies. Sydney, is it your turn to tell us? Well, give us, if you can, the kind of the thumbnail sketch of the plot without spoiling the ending, please.
Oh, sure. I actually picked up my grandparents from the airport. They flew in from North Carolina.
Cool.
See the show, and I attempted to give a brief overview, and they were so beyond lost. I ultimately gave up. But we follow.
Is that a commentary on North Carolina people from North Carolina, or just generally?
Who knows? My grandparents are lovely people, but
are they listening now?
Probably.
Give them a shout out.
Hi, Mom. Hi, Papa. Hi, Mom. I'm pretty sure my brother's still asleep.
Yeah.
Okay, a thumbnail
it's spring
sketch.
Break. Yeah.
There are three main groups that we are following throughout the whole story. We have the fairies, including the fairy king and queen. We have the Athenians, including the young lovers. There are four of them. And then we have the mechanicals that are rehearsing for a play within the play to be performed at the Duke's wedding. So all of these groups are going to intertwine and they are going to mess things up for each other. And then, of course, we have Puck. And Puck is
going
to mess.
And who plays Puck?
Ooh, that would be me.
Okay.
We have Puck, who is going to mess everything up for everyone. But it's okay. All is well.
How many people, this is are in the play?
That's a good question, Tim.
I think scripted parts, there's 19 or 20, but then we've got...
Some people playing two parts?
No. Everybody's only playing one part. Okay. But then we've got the crew, and the crew is probably 10, 15 people.
Is it a busy stage?
Yes.
That's he mentioned before the cityscape. You know, people should come see it just for the cityscape alone. There is a you know, not quite full size, but impressively large Empire State Building that is exactly as tall as it could be in the Panada, not any taller. But it's a really cool set, really cool cityscape.
As well, there are little Easter eggs for audience members to find. For example, if you check out the top of the Empire State Building, you might find a very famous character, King Kong.
Cool.
So, yeah, there's fun little Easter eggs that Tim and our set designer, Val, kind of place throughout the set. Oh, all Val. Val is amazing, by the way. This is a very determined person. She really went all out with this set. She's done sets for us before. This one is amazing.
How about the costumes? You said they're updated, contemporary. Okay. Anybody else, not by name, but we should give a shout out to, like, the carpenters or the set designers, the set creators?
Well, I mentioned ballet earlier.
Tell us more.
The Kokolala Conservatory and Candace McClellan, I think is how you pronounce her last name. They've been working on a dance since end of January, maybe early February. And we got them on the stage yesterday afternoon, and it's a big part of the story. We do a lot of cinematography, visual video stuff during the dance behind them, and it's super impactful. At least for me, I tear up every time I watch it because it's pretty emotional.
Cool. I'd like to ask each one of the artists here. Is this your first play? I know for some of you it's not. What are the challenges of doing a Shakespeare play as opposed to an Arthur Miller play or something like that, something more current, something more contemporary? And jump in anywhere.
Sure. This is not my first play. It's, something like my 20th play in Sandpoint.
Wow.
Both on stage and behind the scenes. In terms of Shakespeare, you know, I've been living with Shakespeare for a long, long time now, but I have directed it before. This is my first chance to act in a Shakespeare because nobody else would ever direct it. So I'm very excited about that.
Yay, Tim.
Yes. Thank you, Tim.
Sure. This
and
is...
you are?
Oh, I'm Sydney. This is not my first play. But I have been doing children's theater in this community for probably 10 years now.
As a director?
No, as a little actor.
Ah.
But this is one of my first big girl productions, I suppose. And this is my first Shakespeare production. And it has been a challenge, for sure.
In what way?
More so just struggling with lines, I think, was the big thing. It was very fun to kind of navigate the language and understand what I was saying in the first place. And also, my monologues all blend together. I think I talk about a horse about 15 times. I don't know why, but... All right, Shakespeare likes horses.
What do you have against horses?
Yeah, no, I don't have nothing about... Horses are great. I was a horse girl growing up. Except I was... the horse. I would pull my little brother on a skateboard.
Okay, and you're one of the fairies in the play?
Yes, I am Puck.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and now we'll turn over to the queen of the fairies.
So, literally one of the challenges I had, I auditioned for this play knowing that I was going in for ankle surgery, and I was like, well, you know, I'll audition. It's good practice. Tim knows I'm having surgery. He won't give me a big part. And then I got to Tanya, Queen of the Fairies, and I was like, okay, so I'll talk to my doctor, and I'm sure I'll be on my feet in a couple weeks. It'll all be fine. So I talked to my doctor right before surgery, and he's like, oh, no, it's months and months of non-weight bearing, and you're going to be on a scooter and in a boot and on crutches. And I was like, my first call was to Tim, and I was like, Tim, what do I do? I think you need to recast me. And he said, no, we'll just write it into the story. You're now in a wheelchair. And I was like, oh, okay. So I do the entire production in a wheelchair, including a dance scene to Dirty Dancing. I've had the time of my life. Not a spoiler alert. You need to come see it. It's hilarious. So there's lots of moments there that would not have happened had I not had ankle surgery. So.
I think the wheelchair dance is definitely worth the price of admission alone.
Along with the ballet.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Wonderful. I have a question for Tim. Is this your first Shakespeare play you have directed?
Directed, yes.
Okay. And what were some of the challenges? Obviously lots of people on the stage. What are some of the other challenges of directing a Shakespeare play as opposed to another writer's play?
Well, I had to understand what Shakespeare was talking about too, right?
Join the group.
The cast was going to come to me and ask me a bunch of questions on what does this mean? What does that mean? And so I had to study the script just as much as anybody else so that I could communicate and incorporate into the blocking ideas that I wanted them to convey through what they were talking about. So if I didn't understand it, I couldn't block it correctly. I couldn't design it correctly. So that was my challenge, really.
Okay. Now, will the performers each be mic'd, or will there be overhead mics? How will that be handled?
No, each actor has a mic, and there's some actors later on in the show that they'll talk, but they won't have mics because we needed the priority to be on the mechanicals during the play within the play.
Let's see. When you talk about, I guess, when you're doing a Shakespeare play, Michael, you're pretty, I guess, reverent to the bard. You didn't want to cut very much. When an actor is struggling with their lines, do you allow them to change it or modify it to their taste, or is it you stick to?
Well, yeah, no, I'm definitely the purist.
Yeah.
on set here. I definitely don't mind cutting. Nobody ever performs Shakespeare without trimming it down a little bit.
Yeah.
But I was the stickler for the pronunciation and preserving the pentameter. So I had to get people to say what persever instead of persevere and what a revenue. There's a lot of resistance to saying revenue instead of revenue, but the poetry just doesn't work if you don't say revenue.
Revenue. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now I would have resisted that. I would have been one of the resistors.
In the audience, turn to the person. What did he say?
Revenue. Yeah, I get it. Okay. Yeah, but you gotta stick to the pentameter.
Yeah, that's the whole point.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty cool that you stuck to the pentameter. I would say. I don't know. What's the most fun thing about doing Shakespeare? Why do you keep coming back to Shakespeare again and again?
Oh. I don't know. That's a big question. I'm going to put that aside, actually, because the most fun thing about this play is that it is a comedy.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And I specifically have a very comedic role. So it's sort of everything we're doing on my end, in my scenes, is how can we milk one more laugh out of this, right? What else can we do? What else can we do that's funny? Everybody knows Romeo and Juliet, and this play is actually like the flip side, the yin and yang of Romeo and Juliet, because it's the same setup. It's, a young couple wants to get married and the family's against it, right? And then, the difference between a tragedy and a comedy is that in the end, they work it out and they don't die. But the play within the play that's been referred to already, so I'm one of the mechanicals, these are working class men. From
and
the city.
And they're slapstickish, aren't they?
Absolutely. So they've never done a play before. They've probably never seen a play before, right? But they got it in their heads that they're going to put on a play for the Duke's wedding day, right? So they're rehearsing, and all the comedy is about how incredibly bad they are. But the story they're performing
is the sort of original source material of Romeo and Juliet, the tragic love story of the young lovers who you know, kill themselves because of a misunderstanding, right? So there are deaths in the play, but there are comedic deaths in the play within the play.
Go ahead. What do you say, Nikki?
I was just going to say one of the things that kind of keeps the play within the play going is Sarah Caruso's role as Peter Quince. She's self-referred to as the activities director, and it is her part in and of itself is hilarious. She really keeps that comedy moving at a fast pace, and it really makes the whole thing kind of sing when you watch it.
Yeah. I'm guessing, Michael, you've seen this play performed more than once before.
Yes. I probably more than any other play I've seen. I've seen many versions. And
so I asked him already, but as you having seen it many times, now you're in it. But this, what's different about this performance compared to the performances that you've seen before? Or what did you, having seen other ones, what are the elements that you wanted to make sure that you did grab for this interpretation?
So one, you know, I don't want to like put down the play now, but one thing that can really drag in this play in productions I've seen is the, what should be the central plot, the young lover story, right? Because it can be sort of, it can be too earnest, right? The fairies are fairies, and the mechanicals within the play is slapstick humor. All that's easy, but the young lovers can be played way too earnest, and their lines are funny. So, you know, we have the younger cast. I don't know, what are the ages, age range? 16, 17 for these young actors. The grand old woman of the four is 22. But they're so funny. They got the comedy. They're hilarious, right? And they keep the pace moving in those scenes, which is good because it's, you know, it's the bulk of the play really is their scenes. And I'm really so impressed with these young kids. We could have Tim give their names. I don't know all their names.
Go ahead, Tim.
Well, Toby Jensen, we just mentioned she plays Helena. We have a newcomer to us, Linnea Ledbetter, who plays Hermia. Aiden Phillips, who's never acted before, plays Demetrius. And Angel Rogers is our Lysander.
Okay, Tim, where are you now in terms of, is tonight a dress rehearsal, or what's happening now? With where are you at?
We're at our final dress tonight.
Okay.
We open tomorrow, so it's because it's a longer show. We've only gone through in its entirety a couple times. I mean, we've gone through every scene. We run it. But because we only got a limited amount of time in the Panada during rehearsal days, we've only run it once in the space. So tonight will be the second time in its entirety. But the show is polished, and it's exceptional and ready for presentation tomorrow.
What are some of the last things as director you're looking for tonight? You know, in terms of blocking on the stage, how people move, where are you at?
I'm more looking for how the cast is holding up, what the chemistry's like backstage.
Okay.
We've spent all week during the day polishing the set components and the visual components.
Okay.
And so I'm really just making sure that the actors are finding their way on stage and that the sound cues and stuff are hidden. Like my part of it is done. Now it's the technical side of it to make sure that the crew is and the cast is all working together.
I was just going to add that this is my third play with LPO, and I sometimes underestimate why they call this Hell Week for us. We're in the theater from about 5 to 10 at night, and we are working that entire time. So we're either working on scenes individually, or we're running our dance number, or we're running the play in its entirety. And so by the time we get to Friday, it's opening night, it's a relief for us. We're like, okay, here we go. And just as an aside, one of the things you asked about was the Shakespearean language. You can't improv Shakespeare. So if you are up there and you're not saying your exact line, you're going to throw something off and there's a wrench in the works and it sounds completely out of place. So our memorization skills were really sorely tested with this play.
Under pressure.
Yes. Mm. And it really, like, all of us feel, I think, fairly comfortable now. I know Sydney has a couple improv lines that are specific to her character that mm-hmm. are also planned. So it's just kind of makes a different type of environment if you're memorized so completely that you have no room for error.
Okay. Okay, let's take a music break. We're with Tim Bangle and Michael, Nikki, and Sydney from A Midsummer Night's Dream. One more time, the play is on tomorrow night and Saturday night at the Panada Theater, Friday and Saturday at 7 p.m. Doors open at 6. And then next weekend on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 7 o'clock on the nights of Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and a matinee at 2 o'clock on Sunday. Beach Boys,
mm-hmm.
on this date in 1964, this song was released.
Round, round, get around, I get around,
yeah,
get around, round, round, I get around,
I get around,
round, 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 I get around.
That was the Beach Boys mm-hmm. on this date in 1964, April 2nd. This was their first chart-topping hit. And of course, what it did is it threw down the gauntlet, the glove, to the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
And there was tension between the two groups.
Shakespeare's having a moment right now.
Oh,
William Shakespeare is having a moment. I would say. I think he's cyclical. Sometimes he's very popular and sometimes he's down. He's very popular right now. You just saw Hamnet.
I saw Hamnet. You know, he's very, but that's all fictional. It's not based on, it's based on a very slim that his son died in actual fact. And, but everything else is fictionalized. But, it depends what Shakespeare play. There are some real obscure ones. Timon of Athens you don't see performed too often, and there's good reasons for that. But this is one of Shakespeare's more popular plays, especially comedies.
A Midsummer Night's Dream.
You
which
bet.
Is what we're talking about here with Tim Bangle, the director, Michael Bigley, Nikki Lutman, and Sidney Carlson, who are all in the cast of the play. Let's describe for the listeners, starting with Sydney, who you play and what aspects of your character, you know, are most important to you.
Awesome, thank you. My name is Sydney. I play Puck, who is the trickster and destroyer of our production, and Tim came to me with the challenge of creating Puck as a clown.
Okay.
It was just fun in itself. And he wanted me to become very animated with my movements and with my dialogue, which took months to figure out. And I think it wasn't until we got into the Panada with the set and I was hyped up on caffeine that I really found the character and found the movements and the comedic timing, because I'm not a clown. I'm just a high schooler. But I watched a lot of mimes. There's a mime that performs at SeaWorld, and he is hilarious and viral on all social medias. And so I had fun embodying his characteristics.
So that's not in the script. The physicality, I guess I've never read A Midsummer Night's Dream, but the physicality of the character, who came up with that? You? Tim? Michael?
Tim, probably.
Yeah. I mean, I have the idea, and then it's up to the actor to figure out. I had no idea that Sydney was as I don't know what the word is, but she's very funny, but she's also, I mean, there's, I don't know the character's name on Seinfeld, but the tall kind of clumsy dude.
Why, that's Kramer.
Kramer. Mm-hmm. Like there's aspects of kind of Kramer in her performance and just how she moves her body. And You know, she'll like throw her legs out as and she's like shocked or surprised or angry. She just does this like kick and punch kind of thing at the same time. And her facial expressions are just gold. It's very funny to watch her perform.
Well, that'll be, we can look forward to that.
I want to ask Sydney, will you be under any great pressure knowing that grandma and grandpa all the way from North Carolina came here? And it's just not like they came up from Sagal.
I guess so. But I also know they love my performances no matter what. They've been to most all of my productions since I started acting. I think I was 7 was when I first went on stage. And my mom at least has been to most every production.
Well, I'd like to ask you, well, this is for all of the performers here. When you know someone is out in the audience, do you glance at them when you're up on the stage, or do you ignore them? Or I've never been up on the stage, but I would assume that would distract me. Like, oh, there's grandma and grandpa.
You can't see them.
Okay, you can't see
anybody in the audience. I mean, maybe you can see the first row, which is another fun point. If you don't want to be targeted, don't sit in the first 3 rows. I will find you.
Okay. That's true. One of the great things she gets to do is mess with the audience. So there's no fourth wall for Puck. Yeah. But I will say, so the idea of, you know, seeing people in the audience, in a big stage like the Panit, the great big stage, all the lights, no, you can't see most of the audience. But I've certainly performed in other theaters where you can see everyone. And yeah, it can be tempting to like try and, oh, what's their reaction? But you got to shut it off. You got to shut it off. Yeah, you have to stay in character.
One of the things that is funny, you can't see them, but you can hear them.
Ooh,
so Tim has a very distinctive laugh. And we will all be performing kind of lost in the moment. And then you hear Tim's great big guffaw from the audience. And we're like, okay, that one hit. Okay. Mm-hmm. But we have other audience members that, you know who you are. We will know that you're there if we can hear you in the audience laughing. And it does audience participation. It is wonderful to hear our audience laugh. Don't be stiff, you know, stuck in the muds. For sure, if you think it's funny, laugh. That's
Please
what we're
do
there
laugh.
For.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mike.
What? Oh, I thought it was going to be Nikki's turn to talk about her character.
Should we?
Yeah.
She pushed the microphone away.
She shoved it. Yeah. All right. So I play flute, Francis Flute, the Bellows Mender, right?
The what?
Bellows Mender.
The Bellows Mender.
Bellows Mender. Okay, yeah, sure. So this is one of the funny things. So, you know, well, let's see. I'll try not to get on too much of a tangent here. But, you know, doing something like setting this play that's supposed to be in ancient Athens in modern New York is actually sort of completely authorized by the script, because Shakespeare's writing this play in ancient Athens, and he has characters like, you know, straight from myth, like Theseus and Hippolyta. But then he's got these working class men, and all their jobs are the kind of jobs that working class guys would have had in 17th century London, not ancient Athens, right? So a bellows mender is, you know, fixes the organs, church organs, right? And then, but there's lots of jokes embedded in the name too, right? So I'm called Flute. In the play within the play, I'm conscripted to play the lady, right? Unwillingly. And so I have to talk in a high flute-like voice, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a joke there. But yeah, so it's been a lot of fun to me, even though this is not a great dramatic role. You know, I'm not going to make anyone cry unless it's tears of laughter, hopefully. But to play, you know, a guy's guy, right, who then has to react and be unwilling to play a woman and then end up by the last scene in a great big skirt and a fluffy pink corset, speaking this ridiculous voice and then performing tragedy, you know, it's been so much fun. I've loved this role. And one of the other great things is
the play within the play, it's called Pyramus and Thisbe, right? So Thisbe's mm-hmm. the woman. Pyramus, the great hero of that, is Bottom the Weaver, right? One of Shakespeare's great characters, right? This over-the-top buffoon who wants to play every role, who's just overly dramatic. And this is played by Mike Clark, who I've done, you know, many plays with. And so it's just so fantastic to get to have, you know, fun and play around and find the moments of comedy with somebody that I've worked with so many times. And I'm just loving this production.
Okay. And Nikki, you're the queen of the fairies.
Yes. And I too get to have an interlude with Bottom the Weaver. So my role really is pivotal in that my king and I are in a tiff. And as a sort of practical joke on me, he decides that he's going to place a spell on me. And I think it's really funny in this, what we've kind of done with this woman in a wheelchair who really kind of comes into her own power. I have a tiny little fairy army, and they are not to be trifled with. And I think that's what makes my scenes a little bit more comedic forward, is this crazy sort of merry band of ragamuffins that I'm leading here that really carries out my will and is quite torturesome. I don't know if that's a word, but it should be, because it's quite funny.
It's Shakespeare.
So
it's
we
a
took
word.
what in many renditions of this particular play is more like a romantic, you know, still funny, but not like Michelle Pfeiffer played this role. And it's one of those things where she kind of took it on very seriously, and she's so lovely. And that's not what we're going for here. We're full out, flat out laughing.
Well, within the hierarchy of New York City's kind of culture, the fairies embody the street element of New York City.
Okay.
So, you know, by day they are in disguise as these various street characters, but by night, New York City
excellent.
You know, the dark alleys kind of stuff, it can become kind of creepy. And that's kind of the spin that we added to the fairies, is they're very creepy and edgy,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Mm-hmm. Midsummer Night's Dream at the Panada Theater, tomorrow and Saturday, the 3rd and the 4th at 7 p.m., doors open at 6, and then a four-day reprieve, and then again on April the 9th, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7, and on Sunday the 12th at 2. Tim, what do you do in that 4 days between first weekend and second weekend?
Sleep. For sure. But we also have a pickup rehearsal on Wednesday, so we're not down the entire 4 days. But, yeah, 3 days of rest.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And tickets are available at panada.org or at LPO Rep. And break many legs. Cool. Mm-hmm. And we have now Festival at Sandpoint coming in. Yes, Nikki.
I just have one more thing to add. Continuing with the Shakespeare vein, LPO Rep will be hosting our annual summer camp for kids, and we will be doing a workshop on The Tempest. So it's a 3-week class. We will be launching that relatively soon. Tim and I have had our hands full with Midsummer, but as soon as we've got that sort of figured out, we will be announcing our upcoming summer camp, and we will be doing The Tempest, and it's going to be taught by Liz Iha, who's a veteran teacher here of the theatric arts, and we're really looking forward to it.
Well, can we have you and Tim come on? No, Tim doesn't want to. He's just, you know, Midsummer Night's Dream is just going to trash him. Well, we can move the folks out of the studio. On this date in 1975... this became the signature song for the group called Kiss.
Excellent.
Play it loud. That is Kiss, rock and roll all night and party every day. That became their signature song, and it was released on this date, April 2nd, 1975. When's the last time you heard a Kiss song, Jack?
It's been a while, actually. Yeah, I guess probably when Kiss was back on the airwaves when Ace Frehley died last year, I think. They had a resurgence, but I think Gene Simmons is coming to Spokane. Just saw a billboard for him. Yeah.
What fun.
Yeah. There you go. Rock and roll all night. Now, that one was not a big hit at the time, I don't think. Right? It wasn't until the live version came out later.
The double platinum live album came out. But I wasn't a big Kiss fan, but I loved their energy and their visuals.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
What else is there about Kiss?
Certainly not their lyrics.
Okay. All right. We must be kind. We are here now with two members of the staff of the festival at Sandpoint. Tess Howell is director of finance. And Veronica Knowlton is director of operations, and there's been some major announcements in the last week or so.
There have been.
Okay. Who wants to tell
share
the radio?
Time. It's time to share them.
To the radio listeners, those who haven't heard yet, what recent announcements have you made?
I believe on Tuesday, our most recent announcement was Switchfoot. They will be playing Friday, August 7th. And then before that announcement, we had Portugal the Man on Monday. They will be performing Saturday, August 1st. And both of those tickets go on sale 7 a.m. tomorrow morning. So be online, 7 a.m., get your ticks.
And where do they go?
Festival@sandpoint.com.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. We're
very excited.
All right, I'm looking for the full lineup here. So right now we have Thursday, July 30th, Annie Grammer with Walk Off the Earth.
Yes.
Friday, July 31st, Aaron Lewis in the State Liners.
Yes.
Saturday, August 1st, Portugal the Man. Nothing listed for Sunday.
Nothing yet. Stay tuned.
Okay. Thursday, August 6th, Midland. Friday, August 7th, Switchfoot. Nothing listed for the second Saturday.
No.
Okay, and then Sunday, August 9th, is How to Train Your Dragon 2 in concert. So we have at least two announcements forthcoming.
Two more announcements forthcoming.
When will that occur, do you know?
As the artist allows. So we are at the discretion of the artist management teams.
Let's see. Any hints you'd like to give us about what's coming on those 2 days?
Yeah. Here he is.
Okay, go ahead.
The largest hints I can say is that they'll be hosted at Memorial Field.
Okay.
And there will be live music involved.
This is good.
Good hint.
Veronica, just you know, for somebody who doesn't know with booking and whatever, why is it that the artist controls the release of the information as opposed to the organization?
That's a great question. Most of the time, the artists are looking holistically at their entire tour.
Okay.
So often artists will go on tour, usually in the summer months in North America, starting in May, sometimes concluding in October, November, depending on arena and indoor shows. And so they want to protect all of the venues, and usually they announce their whole tour at the same time. And this is just how it is done.
It does, in one sense, make sense, you know, that let's say, for example, they release now that they're coming to the festival at Sandpoint, and they're not done yet finishing all the legs of their tour. Mm-hmm. People in Spokane might, let's go buy the tickets and not support the venue and if they ended up in Spokane.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
And most of the time, to that point, without getting too granular, most venue contracts have what they call a radius clause. And so radius clauses
clause.
Differ.
Oh,
so most venues will say this artist cannot perform within 120 miles for 6 months, a calendar year. Some venues, not the festival, some venues have a 500-mile radius clause, which prevents artists from performing anywhere in that geography.
It's a whole nother world, isn't it?
It is.
500 miles radius. That would include, that's like Seattle would cover
Sandpoint.
Yeah,
I think.
That's huge.
It's a huge, Yeah, so we're often blocked by Spokane or vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about Missoula sometimes?
Depends on the artist.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, hold on 1 second. I'm going to try something here. We may just get a dial tone. Caller, are you there? Caller, can you hear me? We had a phone call a minute ago. I want to see if the person, if the person's there. Nope. Whoever it was, they hung up. Okay. Thanks for calling. Nice try. No tickets available at this time anyway. So, okay. There we go. Okay. Where were we?
Okay. Outside.
I think we thought we might.
Yep. There it is. Back okay, again. Let's see.
Karif, why you're on the air.
Hi. I had called earlier, but I was hearing the radio and I didn't know if my voice would interrupt the thing. So that's why I hung up. But it's probably just because I'm supposed to turn my own radio off. I just wanted to say before you got back into Otto's Eclectic Mix, you rarely do news update or sports updates, but yeah. You did one on the men's side, but yeah. You didn't announce that it was the men's side, and you didn't tell us what was going on with the women's basketball. They're down to their final game, right? Oh, I was hoping.
I could speak to that.
Jim's going to cover that right now. Hey, thanks for calling.
Okay, well, thank you.
Bye. Okay, you bet. Very briefly, I will do this, and then we can get back to this festival. The same four teams, final teams from women's last year, are the same four teams this year. Connecticut, UCLA, Texas, and South Carolina. And UConn is undefeated this entire year, and the word is they're going to go through and sweep it. So, and I think the games are two games on Friday and then the final on Easter Sunday. So it's the same lineup, and my beloved Notre Dame made it to the Elite Eight, but crashed and burned against UConn, and I am not happy.
I'm sorry.
Okay, back to the festival.
Yeah. Festival at Sandpoint. Yes.
Okay, I want to ask, this might be off, where is the festival now in terms of you've got two more acts, to really, then what are you in a holding pattern or what sort of busyness is on your plate?
Well, we have to book all of the support acts as well. So sometimes we have a say in that if the tour doesn't already have a support act booked.
Okay.
They do approve everything, but we often offer our suggestions. Whereas sometimes the tour comes with the support and we don't have a say. For example, Andy Grammer, Walk Off the Earth. Walk Off the
they
Earth.
Came together.
They came together. That was a package. Together.
Now, when the festival selects a warm-up group, does it have to be approved by the artists themselves?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So it's just not throwing anybody in there.
Correct. And then before the festival starts this summer, we are holding a concert at the Hive on June 13th.
Great venue.
It's more of a friend raiser, if you will.
Okay.
So we really just want to reach as many people as possible, have a really fun evening, and we will promote our education programs at the event, but it Perfect. Won't be your typical fundraiser.
And who's performing there?
Snacks at Midnight.
Okay.
And you might remember them. They opened for Third Eye Blind last year.
Last year.
And they do play at the Hive occasionally, and they put on a really great show.
June 13th. Okay.
Around the corner.
Yeah, it is. Hey, it's 9 o'clock. You're listening to 88.5 KRFY. We are still talking to Tess Howell and Veronica Knowlton from the festival at Sandpoint. Stay tuned for Bird Note in just a few minutes. It won't be too long now. So keep those radios tuned in, you birders. Let's see. What else is on the agenda for the festival? What else is on your voluminous talking points here? Anything else you want the listeners to know about?
Yeah, one more thing. I know we're currently on spring break, but do not forget our scholarships close April 10th. We have 5 scholarships available for Boundary and Bonner County students. All the information is listed on our website under our education tab. Great way to support students' music ventures. And as you were saying earlier about KISS, we have a new music appreciation scholarship this year. So students are encouraged to complete a 3x5 postcard. It can be an essay, it can be a painting, it could be a crossword puzzle with song titles, however you want to creatively express how music has impacted your life. Brand new scholarship, and that's $1,000. That is not restricted to educational purposes. So.
Okay, and that is on the website, festival@sandpoint.com.
com.
Yes.
Okay.
/education will get you all of our scholarship details, and those close April 10th.
Oh, that's around the corner. Yeah, I mean, that's like a week from Friday, week from tomorrow.
Yes.
And that scholarship is available to LPOSD, Bonners Ferry, and Priest River. So there's three separate ones.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the website will explain all.
Yes. And most of the school's counseling offices should have
that information.
Postcards that are already stamped and ready to go. So
perfect.
Wow.
Perfect.
You don't even have to pay for the stamp.
No.
Well, look at that.
In this economy, come on.
So really you're winning like 1,078 cents.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
And it's 61 cents per to mail a postcard.
Oh, postcards are cheaper.
Yeah. Postcards.
$1,000 and
61 cents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. What more? Anything more you want to make sure we get out here before we turn it over to Bird Note?
I can ask you, the previously announced performers, how are the ticket sales going?
Very well.
Are there any concern about, you know, like, oh, I don't know if I'll go or not, I'll go, you know, any ones that are close to sell out?
Not close to sell out yet. We've only been on sale, I believe our longest performance is 3 weeks now. If we do get in sellout territory, it'll probably be mid-June. Our lineup this year has been so very well received by the community. It's been really fun. It's a younger lineup, I think, than we're traditionally known for. So we're very excited to see how Sandpoint comes and celebrates with us this summer.
Yeah, Portugal the Man is kind of a get. Mm-hmm. I was a little mm-hmm. surprised to see that. Look at the festival.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
we're trying.
Pretty cool. nicely done. Let's see. No sellouts yet, but tickets are moving. Okay, that's good. We've got the scholarships almost. The window's almost closed.
April 10th.
Winners announced again? When you decide who gets a scholarship?
Early May. Okay. It's in line with the high school's scholarship.
That's
night.
When they all kind of come out?
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you two both for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
It's been a while. We usually get a different crew from the festival.
Yes. This is Paul Gunter and
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They must be on spring break.
They are.
Happy spring and happy Easter to both of you.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks. Good happy, to see happy. You both. And we've got Bird Note.
Mm-hmm. Bird Note next.
And anything else in sports we need to? The final four for the men is Illinois, Michigan, Arizona, and UConn.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And yes. And if Michigan goes all the way, I go all the way. I win all of my tournaments if Michigan wins the whole thing.
Oh, please let that happen.
I know. Yeah, thank you. I'll feel much
Jack,
better.
Jack, have a happy spring, happy Easter, and... Now, here is Bird Note.